Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon, reunited, the full team, the trio. You've got JB there.
Hello, Tim.
Well, just about still here. We didn't think you were going to be here on Friday evening.
I am not feeling well, but I'll crack on.
Did you actually go to hospital?
Yeah, on Saturday night.
Wow.
Oof. Straight after the game.
Big hit.
Not exactly.
Did you go in and say, get me a doctor, not my wife?
Get me a doctor, yeah. Exactly right.
And hello, Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Right, I'm going to set you a little hypothetical here.
Of course.
And I'll explain why. So, you are the coach of a team. It's a tight game. You are 9 points down with 15 minutes remaining. And one of your players clearly drops the ball. As they're running towards the try line, the referee, unsighted, gives a try inexplicably. All the players are looking around a bit embarrassed, but the attacking team start jogging back. You're the coach of the team. What do you do?
Hang on. So my team have scored.
Your team have scored.
But you think that you know that
it shouldn't have been given. Yeah, it should not have been given.
It was. There was never, ever, it wasn't even a marginal, there was no question. What do you do?
You celebrate like wild and you're incredulous if anyone questions you.
No, it depends what game this is. If it was an important game.
I've got a feeling that I'm thinking Premiership. Are you thinking Premiership?
If it's Premiership,
but
yeah.
I suspect it's not.
If it's a less important game, and particularly if there are children involved, I would hope that coach would do the right thing and flag to all involved.
Of course. I mean, if a coach was in charge of children, he'd be a scumbag if he didn't do the right thing, Phil. I mean, it goes without saying. But we're obviously talking about highly coached professionals here, right?
Yes. If it's highly coached professionals,
well, winning's everything. We're not kids.
Celebrate.
Experience, yeah.
Okay. This really happened today.
Today.
It happened at Sedgley Park.
Oh.
Phil Largan, Sedgley Park, who were playing against Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park. And
by the way, I've got more games with the Broughton Park ones than Raffy Quirk. Can we call it more? JB's Broughton Park.
More than Raffy Quirk and Simon McIntyre combined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dan Scarborough.
Yeah. You'll be very pleased to know, and I'm very pleased to report, that a credit to Sedgley Park, a credit to rugby, the coach walked across to the referee and said, "Sir, you cannot award that try."
Fair play.
Well done. That is, I'm impressed.
I had a feeling the story's going to be about you, Tim, but it's not. Well done.
Well, it's going to be about you getting the champagne out and spraying it in the losers' faces.
I had the ski mask on, spraying the champagne. No, it was brilliant, and I just went up to the coach and said that was really classy. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. Yeah. That's great to hear, my beloved Sedgley Park.
Yeah,
Setsy,
good club.
Who was the coach? Anyone that we'd know?
No, I don't know, but whoever the coach was of the Sedgley Park under-15s, well done. Credit to rugby and the club, and yeah, good stuff. Yeah. But so I thought I'd start on a nice positive.
But if you are in the Manchester area and you're under-14 and you've got talent, don't go to Sedgley Park. Come to Tim Cocker's under-14s.
under-15s, but yeah.
Under-15s, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And also, if it's the Premiership final and you drop the ball over the line, start celebrating.
Oh yeah, like Neil Back. Like I'm here for Neil Back's yeah. hands in the Heineken Cup final.
At what age is it okay to cheat? So I think anything I call rugby, it's okay to cheat. If you can get away with it, you do it.
Senior Colts.
Senior Colts, that's when we start teaching them to cheat.
Yeah, agreed. Right, we are everywhere you get your podcasts. Hit subscribe if you haven't already. We're the only podcast that's there for you 52 weeks of the year, and this is our 10th season. If you appreciate it, you can hit subscribe, you can leave a 5-star review, and you can get more content at patreon.com/eggchasers. Tell me about your... you didn't play any rugby.
No, I did. I did. I attempted 10 minutes and it got too much for me.
You're in crippling pain and you still attempted rugby.
Yeah, yeah. I'm an idiot. And it wasn't even the first team game. Mind you, if it's the first team game, I definitely wouldn't have played. So yeah. It was the second team game. First team were off. We've got Widnes next week in what will always be a great game, Tokage versus Widnes. Looking forward to that one. So the second team, we're about to play Ultram Kursel, who maybe you don't recognise him as a big club, Phil, because...
Mark Cueto's old team, Kursel.
They've always been a decent club.
Yeah, a decent club, but I guess you know, they wouldn't have registered it when you're in the national leagues, but certainly a big regional club.
Yes.
And the point here isn't about local grassroots rugby in Manchester, to be clear to anyone. Yeah. This is about dwindling numbers, participation numbers.
They showed up with 12 players. So really? We had a full side plus a full bench. We gave over one of our players to them, and then this sort of links into something I want to talk about anyway, the RFU promoting limited number rugby. We had to start with 14, which is not ideal when all the lads have made the effort to show up, and they had 13. Now, the results, as you would imagine, went very heavily in our favour, and I've got nothing but respect for those boys that showed up, because I'm not being funny. If someone told me there's only 11 other guys going to play rugby today, I don't think I'd have gone.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I'd have said, nah, you're all right, thanks. I'll go and do something else. They showed up. They played hell of a hard. And they've got some bloody good players there. But it just shows tough times.
Yeah, it's something, obviously, we've spoken about it at grassroots level. And we touched on it, I think, 2 weeks ago in the Premiership, where for the first 2 weeks, it looked like average attendances were down. Now, obviously, in the first 2 weeks, there were... multiple rearranged games as a consequence of the Queen, but now it looks like that trend is continuing. Like the stats for Exeter are rolling out 2,000-3,000 fewer fans than they were for equivalent games last season.
Tough,
and these are good games.
Like, yeah, they're great games. Oh, the Premiership can't get any better, right?
Yeah.
So anybody who talks about we need this isn't particularly aimed at eating, but like, you know, more ball in play time or more points or speeding things up, I don't see that as an issue at the moment, do you? I mean, I could see it in the winter, definitely in the winter, but right now the Premiership could not be any better.
The rugby's well worth watching.
Yeah, exactly right.
We don't need less kicks.
We don't need anything more.
If the argument was, more attacking rugby will see more fans in, it's incredibly tough to make that argument right now, because we've never seen as attacking rugby as we have for the last few weeks. It's been phenomenal from that perspective.
I wonder if, because most seasons do start off more attacking than not. I'm sure this time last season we were saying the same things because there were some big, big scores. I wonder if it's this time of year that people take notice and go, oh, look, big scores. I'll definitely go in October.
Yeah.
And they show up early, in October and it's 6-5.
Yeah, but next few weeks I'm really busy, but then first week of November,
I'll clear the date in my diary.
And all the internationals aren't there. It's pouring down. Driving
I'll
rain.
Never do this again. I will never be tricked into rugby ever again. That's all I can think of.
So what exactly what has been proposed? Because I know this had you slightly vexed, JB. So yeah.
Not
so,
proposed. Well,
no,
I proposed.
So the context is dwindling participation numbers. You highlighted it, and I mentioned John Newcombe, who will probably have a Rugby Times article, Rugby Paper article on this very soon. The number of walkover games that cannot be fulfilled because one team or both teams cannot field a team at some first team lower league levels and at lower team levels across the board. Allied to that, or one way to try and combat and try and get some sort of rugby happening in clubs, is the RFU are trying to say that every club should have touch rugby as part of their offering.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't. That's the first thing. So this reminds me of something which I spoke to a rugby journalist, a bona fide rugby journalist, in one of the broadsheets about maybe just before COVID. And it went something along the lines of this, which is the RFU for the longest time wouldn't give you exact breakdowns of who is playing the game. So it wouldn't say males of this age or females of that age. They will literally just say, these are numbers of players. Look, we are doing a great job. Look at the rising participation numbers. And actually what they were doing is they were fudging it. At that time, they were including female players too. So because...
So they weren't comparing like with like.
Exactly right. Yeah. So because the women's game has grown, and a lot of it has grown because of the money the men's game makes and is then poured into the women's game, which is absolutely fine. No issue with it.
It's also growing from a point of not zero baseline, but a very low baseline.
Small baseline,
But it is growing, which is obviously good, but it's going to inflate the numbers overall. Yeah. If you're comparing, say, to 30 years ago where there was virtually zero women's game, that is increased massively.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, absolutely correct. So that's what they did, and they distorted the numbers. Now, I don't think that there are many more women that can bail out the RFU. And therefore, they're looking around thinking, how are we going to mess around with these numbers? Let's make a land grab for touch. So there's already a touch union. The touch union don't even call the sport that they play rugby. They call it touch. Mm-hmm. That's why it's the touch union. And they do a really good job because they care about touch and it's a really good sport. And if rugby isn't for you for whatever reason it is, you don't like the contact, have a look at touch. It's fine.
I don't think that... I thought there would be a local like Wednesday Night Touch League in Manchester or something.
There's not a touch league.
I thought there was, but there doesn't appear to be.
There definitely has been in the past.
There has been in the past. I'm not wanting to go down that rabbit hole, but I was looking around because I don't want to play full contact rugby a lot, and actually I wouldn't mind if I was in a team, something competitive.
I have played at Burnage a few times. I've not played since before COVID. But that was always good. There was lots of teams. You'd get, I don't know, 20 teams out on a whatever it was, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night. And it was good fun. It's a different game.
Yeah,
but if you know the game, it's good fun, and you can have some camaraderie and some skills.
So you're thinking that you continue.
Well, the way it was published by... Well, the way Owen Slott in The Times put it was... Well, and certainly in the headline, that touch was mandatory. So the RFU wants every club to offer touch to broaden out the base of rugby. But what is the point? I mean, like, what is the point? Why don't rugby then offer Sabutio rugby or drafts or chess? You know, it's not the same
thing. Rugby drafts could be under the RFU.
Oh, look how much we've included. You know, we've increased participation because of fancy rugby draft. It's just not the same thing. So if their job is to maintain the 15s game, which it fundamentally should be, in my opinion, then that's what they should do. In fact, this is controversial. I don't really, and I don't like saying this often because I do respect the guys that do it, but I don't really class sevens as rugby, to be honest. I count rugby league as rugby, and I count rugby union as rugby, and everything else is sort of like a tangential hobby which people can do if they want to. Now, again, I massively respect sevens. It's just not rugby for me. The idea, I think what's going on here is twofold. I think the RFU are hedging their bets. They're looking at all the concussion cases and thinking, bloody hell, how do we survive? You know, how do we stay on this gravy train? Well, let's do something else other than rugby. And the other thing I think they're trying to do is fudge numbers to show that they're doing a good job. And if I was to add a third thing, I think they've given up on the 15s game. That's what I honestly think. So if you look at the participation numbers, as I've mentioned lots and lots of times, well, you need to do some hard work, boys. You know, you need to sit down with clubs, work out what the proposition is to players, and then attract them in. You can't go into this managed decline mode of sending out memos via Twitter about how to play reduced numbers games or how to offer a version of rugby that is more palatable to you.
So they're trying to, I think, like the most generous interpretation of what's going on is they're trying to be pragmatic with the situation that is currently presenting themselves, where there are a lot of fixtures being unfulfilled. How can we get the people, like you said, Altrincham Kersal turned up with 12 guys and you managed to make a game out of it. And I think basically that's what the RFU's intention is with that, is to try and say, no, it doesn't mean, no, don't do what you said you would do. I'm going to go off and go to the Trafford Centre for the day and sack rugby off.
I've spoke about this before. It's fundamentally a numbers game, isn't it? The more numbers you have, the more numbers that you will get. No one wants to go training with 8 people. But if you have 15 people, you'll then get 20 people. 20 people gets 30 people, so on and so forth, right? So it's fundamentally a numbers game. So clubs need to solve that equation before they go forward. I also think that... Well, I'm not going to talk any more about how to attract players into your club, because I think I've spoke about that in loads of other podcasts. I don't think I want to go over that ground. I think the RFU are in a large part now behaving like the National Trust. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
Little bit.
But the National Trust, their job is to preserve all buildings. That is their job. There is no other job for National Trust. But it's a pretty well-known open secret that the National Trust just hates old buildings, which is why they go around and put, you know, plaques on them all and put, you know, new wallpaper up and so on and so forth. And I just have a feeling that the RFU are getting less and less comfortable with contact rugby. And if it didn't make them an absolute shed load of money, I'm not entirely sure that they would support it that much at all. And when I listen to the views of the RFU chairman, who, by the way, has never played a second of rugby in his life, from reading about him, I've certainly not on his on his Wikipedia page, and when I've googled him, all it says is chairman of the first black chairman of a major sporting organisation. That's basically it. He says things like he's in rugby to change the world. Well, why can't he just be in rugby to do a reasonable job at administering the game? That would be a better solution, wouldn't it? Can we just get a boring person to come in and have ideas about administering the existing game rather than changing the game to change the world? What does that even mean, by the way?
Well, yeah, it's not even change the game. It's just not have the game in decline.
Yeah.
Like, just keep it at a level that is sustainable, people are enjoying it, it's going forward at least at the same consistent level.
I find comments like this so intolerable. Because it makes the game a laughing stock. Can you imagine if the Table Tennis Federation appointed a chairman who said, "I want to change the world via table tennis"? You would think they were nuts. Like, you would. I honestly think if they.
I've watched Rocky IV. Sport can change the world. If I can change and you can change, we can all change.
Do you know? Funny enough, in my conversations with Premiership Rugby in the past, I've asked them, why are you doing this? And that is the answer I've had. Sport can change the world. And I just think, Christ, I want to hang up the phone now. I want to hang up the phone, or I don't know.
It's one to watch. What do you think, Phil?
Yeah, the only other, because Tim, you tried to give a charitable explanation. For me, looking at it, I think if this is run, say, on a Wednesday night, or if the RFU are saying, run this as one, it's something to get people into the club one night a week, then it's not that big a stretch to say, well, if these people are coming down on a Wednesday night and they're getting ball through hands, they're getting a bit of fitness, these are the kind of people who should be second team, third team coaches and captains, should be getting their numbers and saying, look, come along, guys. It is a way of attracting people, at least through the gates of the club, that can lead on to other positive things. I think I certainly hope that's part of the objective. If it's a purely the cynical side of, look, we're grow numbers by any means so we can see the participation and ignore the 15 games.
Let's start to think about the transition between contact and non-contact.
And I think there's something in that one. There's another aspect of this, and this is phenomenally unpopular, but I'll go with it anyway. We share our club with the footballers. So Didsbury Football Club are also in the same facility as Didsbury Rugby Club, and when they play, I wish them the best of luck and vice versa, and I like them a lot. You know, we go for beers. Good lads. But there is a big psychological difference between men that play contact sport and men that don't play contact sport. And I think that contact element of rugby is so critical because you appreciate risks and you have to be a certain risk taker. What I'm trying to say is I'm not entirely sure I want a bunch of weak men who are not willing to participate in rugby running my rugby club. I'm just not interested in it. I mean, it starts with the non-contact in rugby. Where does it end? And I can't imagine it's going to end anywhere good for me or good for anyone else.
All I would say on that is that there's a reason rugby exists. And it isn't that the sport existed and then people became attracted to it. It's that human nature is a certain way, and we are wired as we have been for millions of years, and that is the reason why rugby exists.
Correct. Now, there are a few times I think touch is fine. Okay, I think it's fine on Wednesday night, club.
Warm-ups,
great. Yep. Training aid. I mean, I don't play it personally. I don't even really play it much in warm-up. I don't see the point in it. So Wednesday nights, you know, if you're not training, it can't be competing with your actual...
It's the perfect thing to do. Coaching a load of 14, 15-year-olds, as I do, it's the perfect thing to do as they're all arriving in dribs and drabs. You can just get something going.
Yeah. Although, do you know, we used to do this in Broughton Park, and, you know, it was fine. But then you'd run over, like, to 15 minutes into your session because you're playing a game of touch. At Didsbury, we've got a range of sort of warm-up games which we used to play. And we've have lapsed back, a bit back into touch before, but the warm-up games themselves are so much better than playing touch. I think you should equip yourself with a bunch of activities lads should play before the game, whether that be, you know, with tennis balls and tennis rackets and, or, you know, in small grids. There's a lot of other things that you can do.
If you have a ball and a bunch of lads that want to get playing, touch is perfect.
Yeah, yeah, it's not bad.
And like Phil says, if there is still a touch league in Manchester, I'm going to get stuck in, because I don't want to have the contact all the time. I'll play matches now and again, but I want to be able to do my CrossFit sessions for JB.
Yeah, I don't think that's a problem. And Braun Park used to have a touch session that went on every Wednesday, and that was full of guys like yourself who'd done their time. You know, they've been released from rugby jail, and they were allowed. They had a little license to actually play touch, and some of the regular players would show up too. It was great fun, and I think that's exactly where it should be. It should be like a social thing, inter club.
That might be what the intention is here.
Yeah, I don't think it was though. Yeah, no, it definitely wasn't, because one of the intentions of this article was the final of the touch tournament would be, or a touch tournament would be played in Twickenham. No, absolutely not. What it can't be is, it can't be like ones, twos, threes in the touch team, and it can't be on a Saturday, and it can't be during the winter.
I think the Saturdays, I wouldn't be averse to it being at Saturdays Twickenham, but it should be separate.
Saturdays are for the boys.
I've got no idea. But
is that like a...
I like it. Let's keep it. Ours, mine.
Type that in on Google, Phil. Saturdays are for the boys. I'm sure it's from something.
Hang on. Is this like when you first typed in Bristol Bears?
or Prem Picks.
Yeah, Prem Picks.
Saturdays are for the boys.
Is it Sundays?
Urban Dictionary.
Is it Sundays are for the boys?
Know your meme. It's a catchphrase. Barstool Sports.
Barstool, there you go. Barstool Sports.
Yeah, that would stack up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it can't be that. The other thing I'm really worried about is, how do the RFU do this? And I suspect I know how they're going to do this.
JB, right, before you say another word, right, so this is where you're really worried about something that you don't know to be true, but you've invented the story in your head and you're really angry about it.
No, you tell me if I'm wrong on this.
Okay, I'd
be interested. Okay, so how would this behemoth, the RFU, attract a small organisation like Touch to sort of, come into its governance? Now, I suspect the people that run Touch for England quite like their Blazers. They quite like being the head people in Touch. I'm sure they're very happy with that. So in order to get them on board, the only thing I can think that the RFU would give them is money, facilities, support. But actually, that's all the same thing, isn't it? It's resources.
Yeah.
So like every other area of the game now, they'll be taking from the profitable bits, which is the men's game, in order to distribute somewhere else. And I just think this is another example of them thinning out the money to broaden the base. And actually, it doesn't ultimately help anyone. I think that they should really be focusing on what the problem is in the men's game. Because when the men's game crumbles, there won't be anything else. Don't think there will be. It's the men's game which powers everything. It's the men's game that makes all of the money. It's the men's game which pays for the economy class flights to New Zealand. make no mistake about it. And if you want to live in cloud cuckoo land, like most of these people do who follow other forms of the game, saying, oh, there's a huge commercial opportunity here, you're wrong. You're wrong, and you will regret it when the men's game is finally in terminal decline.
The decline of the men's game is concerning to me.
Yeah.
Genuinely. And I think the top level right now is okay, but it only takes so many of the kind of foundations and the building blocks below the top level to start crumbling. And if the trends that we've seen on the teams that you've accurately and very well highlighted on Twitter, JB, and that we've seen in Premiership fans, if those trends continue, it is worrying.
It is, isn't it? It's really, really worrying.
We can't do a podcast if there's no game.
No, which is a disaster.
It would be terrible.
Yeah.
The worst.
I have to see my family on a Sunday evening every week.
Let me lighten the mood slightly, and a little funny moment. This was highlighted by, I got an email to contacttechchasers@gmail.com from, just going to give credit, from Thomas Rogers. Thank you, Thomas Rogers. He's pointed out that there is a literally, we got a literally from the Premiership this weekend.
Oh.
It's from Ali Eakin of BT Sports, fantastic commentator during the Saracens-Leicester game.
The thought of the physical durability and attention of McFarland again.
That is a joke.
That is literally
a joke.
Yes, I picked that one up.
Quite literally a joke.
He is quite a joke.
So well, that means Theo McFarland can go to the Tonight at the Apollo or whatever that show is, and he'll have Dara O'Brien will go up there and do his bit. Someone else will go up, and then Theo McFarland will go up and be lifted in a line out.
Literally a joke.
Grab the ball one-handed and throw it to his nine.
Yeah, because that is the joke. So here's one for you. Unpopular opinion. I don't think that he was man of the match, not by a long way.
He had a good game.
Good game. A lot of Saracens had a good game.
A lot of Saracens had a good game.
I'm trying to think.
They were...
I think probably Elliot Daly might have been my man of the match.
Yeah, I think Elliot Daly was man
Elliot
of the
Daly
match.
Elliot Daly would be my second pick for man of the match. You've already mentioned him. I thought Ben Earl was superb.
Ben Earl was awesome.
I mean, if
you had to have one player who you had to clone 15 times and make a rugby team out of. I'm sure we've talked about this before.
We definitely have.
Ben Earl would be a contender for the person you would clone to have 15 of, because you can imagine him doing a good job as a front row.
Yeah.
Back, any
a hooker.
Yeah, definitely. But he's got the gas of an outside centre, or the outside break of an outside centre. He's got good hands.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal player.
He's rapid.
Yeah, his fitness, I think, is what sets him
apart.
Yeah. Because he's got all those attributes. But the amount of interventions... So this is why I think Ben Earl deserves one of the match rather than Theo McFarland. Theo McFarland came into his own towards the end of the game, but Leicester Tigers were beaten. But they were beaten because of the likes of Ben Earl. Ben Earl did the beating.
McFarland, who would win? 15 Theo McFarlands against 15 Ben Earls.
Basketball.
Does one of them play basketball?
I think so. I've heard that. Have you heard that?
Has anyone mentioned it?
I'm not sure it's been mentioned, has it? That he played basketball
for Samoa? I'm not sure.
They should definitely mention that on comms. Definitely. Ben Earl's ace.
Answer my question. Who would win 15 Ben Earls against 15 Theo McFarlands?
Ben Earls.
Ben Earls.
Yeah, I think Ben Earls,
so.
Yeah.
I think Although, so.
Yeah, Ben Earls.
Yeah, give me Ben Earls.
Yeah, just about. I mean,
they're two good ones. Theo McFarland is not a bad one to have.
Yeah, you're right.
He's an excellent player. I mean, he really is a brilliant player. Now, back to Ben Earl. What I liked about this game, or one of the matchups I liked about this game, as mentioned in comms as well, was the battle between Rafael and Ben Earl.
Yeah.
Now, Rafael didn't actually have a very good game at all.
He was pretty quiet, wasn't he?
Very quiet.
By his standards.
And it made me think, why is Ben Earl so good? And I think he's so good because he can probably do 80% of what Rafael can do over the ball. But Rafael can do nowhere near 80% of what Earl can do with the ball in hand.
Yeah.
And I think this is basically Ben Earl all over. And the only reason he probably loses out to Tom Curry is because Tom Curry is great over the ball and probably slightly more powerful, if not as quick or as elusive.
Yeah, well, Curry's bigger.
He is a bigger boy.
Curry is definitely... He's probably a stone heavier than Ben Earl, I would say. Tom Curry is.
Yeah, I'd say so. He's huge at the moment.
And so, force equals mass times acceleration. Ben Earl can accelerate more, but if you've got a stone of extra seven kilos of extra mass, Curry can do more damage via that route.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about... If you were to sort of put them into an order, you'd have the extreme version down here being Simmons, and I'm getting my hand on the left to do that, and then right up here would be Curry, and in between the two is sort of an Earl type character.
An Earl, a Ludlam.
A Ludlam, yeah, Ludlam and Earl are probably equivalent, but I think
Earl's a bit more explosive and dynamic than Ludlam.
I just can't imagine him not being in many other international teams. Actually, no, I can. He wouldn't get into the French team. He wouldn't get into the South African team.
He'd definitely get
into Australia's team.
Australia, he'd be competing in New Zealand, although you'd have a very tough decision as do you play because you can't really play Ardy and Ben Earl.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe looking at the Australia back row, you can see how even though Australia wanted to play one way, when they've got 3-8s, they play another way. If you get Ben Earl and you play around him, I don't think it really matters who you are, you'll still do a bloody good job.
Would he play for Wales? Maybe not.
Well, if Rafael can.
I think he probably would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's a great player.
He's a fantastic player.
I just don't know. On one hand, I'm like, he must being international. On the other hand, when I think about where does he play,
he might be the most valuable Premiership player because he is that good.
Yeah,
but is not an international.
Yeah, that makes you. And he's English. He's academy qualified as well.
So he gets lots of credits coming.
Yeah. Do you know what though? For a World Cup, a guy who can play across the back three. I mean, obviously Tom Curry can as well, but you'd think that'd be valuable.
They've got the options, though, haven't they? Because they've got, like, Ludlam can do it, Simmons can do it.
Who is England's Curry. Six?
What? Laws.
Yeah, he's not getting that.
Yeah,
that's... So Laws is... Laws
short short of that. Laws being injured, like, Laws for the next World Cup will be the starting six.
Yeah, and then eight being Curry or Billy.
Billy's wearing the shirt.
Or Don Brandt.
Billy's playing well.
With Sam Underhill being out injured as well, it's Curry seven... Billy 8 is the kind of where it is at the moment.
Yeah.
Then it'll, which has it'll a bit of balance to it.
Earl coming off the bench is not a bad option.
Don Brandt's an option off the bench, though, as well. Yeah. But yeah, Earl, for the reason you said that he can play across the back row.
Then you could always, I mean, it's maybe a little bit risky, but with Courtney Laws, you can play in the row on the pitch. You could maybe even have Earl and Don Brandt on the bench, because Don Brandt could, worse if you lose 2 second rows, Don Brandt can pack down.
Now,
in the
I don't
row.
Know about it. I don't know this about Don Brandt at all. This is pure speculation, but he strikes me as the kind of player that you'd have at your club who really hates playing second row. I can't imagine him wanting to play second row.
He's Cardiff Met, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was a second row.
I bet he whinged. I bet he moaned about that for hours, hours and hours and hours.
If he gets you a World Cup spot, he won't be moaning too much.
So shall we actually talk about the game?
Well, I'll tell you what, let's get into the game via this email, which you'll really appreciate. You particularly, JB, will appreciate this one. From David Reynolds, contacteggchasers@gmail.com. Love the pod, blah, blah, blah. I'm writing this at halftime of Saracens versus Leicester, and I've come to see the real emergency in Premiership rugby. As sad as Worcester and Wasps' plight is, it's a footnote in this crisis. There are too many tries.
Yes.
What is this?
Sickening.
What is this flowing rugby and open defences we're seeing? Do we think this is the Southern Hemisphere? Jamie George cutting lines from centre and swerving the drift defence? It's no coincidence that crowds have been in decline as scores have been going up. Give me a 3-3 draw in the driving rain and a quagmire of a South Wales valley over this dross on a plastic pitch. 5-try fest. Not an ounce of dirt on their kits. 12 tries by half time across 3 games in the 3 o'clock kickoffs. Bring back mauling in the mud and not knowing who's playing for who, caked head to toe in earth. Yours very concerned, Dave. P.S. JB, there hasn't been enough random aviation chat on the pod recently.
Oh, excellent. Well, I can certainly fix that.
What's going on in the world of planes and aviation? Is one of our aircraft carriers... have we got 2 functional aircraft carriers
well,
now?
Well, funny you mention that. One of them is actually in New York as we speak. So it was in New York this week. They sent the Royal Marines marching band around...
Oh, the one called Queen Elizabeth.
Queen Elizabeth is there, yep. They sent the Royal Marines marching band around Grand Central. Is it Grand Central, the New York station?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yep, they sent them around there. They had the little hover man. Do you the hover man?
Jetpack guy
flew off the aircraft carrier. So all sorts of things going on at the moment.
Some good PR.
Yeah, it's basically PR. Every time they go over to America, they send the Red Arrows, they do loads of PR on New York, and then they disappear again. So, yeah, basically.
Nice gig.
Yes, talk about the game.
Yeah, great gig.
We've already mentioned Jamie George's outside break. Yeah, there was some awesome rugby.
You mentioned that. I couldn't help but... I had this image when Jamie George cut that line. I just had this image of Pat Lam with an arm round Semi Randrandra. Like, this is what you do, Sam. This is how you've got to do it.
The line was great, but Farrell picking that option and timing it, and like his passing is awesome.
I'm so glad you mentioned this. And I didn't know how to bring this up because I knew I was going to get bombarded with hatred for my hatred.
So you, 20 seconds into talking about the actual nuts and bolts of the games, you're going to bring it up.
Yeah, I am. So I thought that pass was magnificent. But 2 or 3 of the Saracens' tries were from really sloppy play. And it was almost as if like the bounce of the ball or the sloppiness caused the try. So the first one, when Daly comes around the corner of Farrell, Van Zyl sort of scoops, you know, sort of skids it across the floor. Farrell picks it up. And if it wasn't for Daly's quick thinking, I'm not sure that that's a try at all, really. There was two moves.
And Farrell's amazing hands.
Yeah, Farrell did okay. there was one where Farrell throws it over Tompkins' head, and then Tompkins sort of regathers it, and they score that one. Another one where he sort of throws it into touch.
Fortune favours the brave, and Saracens are being much more expansive than they've than they've been.
I was going to say, I just don't think it was a very Farrell-like game. So I read the press this morning, like, oh, Farrell and Daly. Farrell did... He didn't do any... Well, he made a few errors, but nothing, you know, nothing major. But I didn't agree with that analysis because I didn't think Farrell was put in a position to win the game because it wasn't a Farrell-type game. It wasn't a game where he needed to control it or grab it by the scruff of the neck. Well, there's a lot of turnovers, there's a lot of kick returns.
Yeah, the flip side is there was a lot of fluent attacking play and he's the guy that's calling the shots on the field.
There was some great... So did you listen to Joe Shaw being interviewed after the game?
No, I did not.
So one thing he said that was... It was interesting, and when he said it, I was like, yeah, that definitely rings true, having just watched the game. He said we've been running lines from deeper, attacking so our lines from deeper, so not running for everything from the 22, but when they're in an attacking situation, just running a little bit deeper. That's all he said, that's the only snippet. And when I watched back, I watched the game and then watched the 10 minutes highlights, some of the tries, they were, so being that little bit further back allowed the guys coming onto the ball. The guys like Lazowski, Daly did it brilliantly throughout the game. Malins did it coming into the line. To just be putting that little bit more pace on it.
Yes.
So if you're a little bit deeper, you're putting more pace on it, which actually makes the passing more difficult, even though you're deeper because you are travelling faster. And it worked very well. Now, how much of
it... Also a lot of work, that's the other thing.
It's a lot of work, but it worked phenomenally well. But looking back... How much of it, I couldn't tell you, how much of it was that, them taking a yard further back, so therefore putting a bit more pace on it, or the fact that my concern when I saw that Leicester backline before the game, and it was very much realised throughout the game, was that combination Burns, Gopeth, Thokunasinga is like a brand new three quarters line. Yeah. And they were cut up. I wouldn't want to put blame on, because there was... It was no one's individual fault across the board. There was mistakes all over the place, and Saracens just cutting great lines. But how much was Saracens playing amazing, and how much was the inexperience of that as a unit?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly what I was going to say next, which was, if you look at that back line, they're very good. They're very competent. I'm sure when they play in the manner the Borthwick wants them to, the combinations do matter, but maybe they don't matter as much when you're that well-planned as Leicester. But then Saracens have got all the planning. They've got... all of the insight in the world, plus they've got the settled combinations.
Yeah, that's what, when I looked at that three compared to Farrell, Tompkins, Lazowski, those three have got, I don't know, somewhere between 50 and 100 Premiership games as a unit, just those three together.
Yeah, hell of a difference. And I think I don't think it really was a massive issue on attack. Well, it was, because it didn't score many points. I thought it was a bigger issue on defence. I thought Gopeth was found out a few times. I thought Corcoran-Singer acquainted himself really well.
He made some good tackles, but it's the individual tackles is one thing. It's the unit and the space that Saracens found in that kind of,
and don't forget,
13 wing channel.
Mumu Vall has hardly played. Watson's first game.
Yeah, so Watson's another
and
one.
He was found short for the first try. He just wasn't tracking.
Any Leicester team in the current iteration, the champions, to concede 50 points against anybody. Mm. It's surprising. We've got whoever's on the team sheet.
Well, there's a few things on this I thought I'd bring up. One, which I think is a broader trend. I don't know if you boys have noticed. When we're talking about momentum now, rather than it being ball in hand or territory or whatnot, penalties at the moment, like if you're giving away penalties, it's not unusual to see six or seven penalties back to back. And this is exactly what Leicester did. And I felt that this was like the polar opposite of what Leicester did to Northampton last week.
Yeah.
They tightened and they tightened and tightened. Now, the slight difference being here is that Saracens were able to score freely like Northampton, but also pressure Tigers like Tigers did. And I don't think Tigers have that extra gear. I think Tigers play as Tigers do, and they can destroy teams like Northampton. They can destroy most teams. But when you've got as well-rounded a game as Saracens and you've got as many options, so you go back to Owen Farrell. Owen Farrell's your perfect man to win a tight game. And then he knows when to let everyone else win it when it's a loose game. And, you know, they can do everything.
But what I will say is, Tigers, you often, JB, say, what positives can the losing team take out of this game? And from this game specifically, not a huge amount from Leicester. However,
no.
This was not Leicester's first team. And I obviously mentioned the three quarters, and you've mentioned the wings, who've not played a huge amount of rugby. But that pack is a weaker pack than normal.
Yeah.
There's quite a few players to come back into that. So I think Leicester will be... They'll be hurting from that, but they'll be quietly confident that if they field a full-strength team, it will be a different story.
Would they? I mean, just thinking about the pack, the front row, I think, is... No, Charlie Clare, it'd be Montoya, Clare, right?
Yeah, Montoya.
They've got Dolly. Phil's right. They've got lots of players to come back, so you don't judge them on that performance, but clearly they had to win the Premiership last year. And I think the... Although they wouldn't have said it to the players and outwardly, but I bet you Steve Borthwick was thinking, we have to win it this year.
Yeah.
Because our adjustment is coming. The same as Exeter had to win that double in 2020. Because that team was then going to start being broken up, as we're now seeing.
I tell you one thing, which is going to be a real tough pill for Leicester to swallow, and maybe all of England, but it's clear to me that Ben Youngs is not the first choice scrum half, not by a long shot. I thought the difference between him and
Van
Portfleet was vast. I actually think the difference between him and Wigglesworth is vast. It's very, very concerning. I thought he had a pretty dreadful game, actually.
It's interesting watching him, because he came off the bench last week, didn't he?
Yeah.
And when Leicester get in front foot ball, he can play how he wants to play, which is he likes to pick up, look at his options, have a little dabble and be a bit of a running threat and then give it.
Mm.
If you've got back foot ball, if your forwards are not going forward, you just can't do that.
That's probably every scrum half.
There are different scrum halves.
Yes,
though.
I agree. Oh, I totally agree.
Stringer off the base, someone like Peter Stringer who fires straight from the base without any running threat, compared to Ben Youngs who does like to pick up, look round, and have that little bit more time on the ball. But yeah, front foot ball is obviously important for all teams, but it affects... I think it affects Ben Youngs disproportionately more than other players.
I completely agree. He can have an absolute horrible game, and he can be very, very effective. I just don't think he's the right guy for Tigers.
But really, really, really impressive performance from Saracens, they were playing in front of them.
Can we talk quickly about Matt Carley? I thought he had a awful game in some respects. So Matt Carley, I quite like, because I know how he's going to referee. He's quite detail-orientated. Mm-hmm. But if I was Leicester Tigers, I think I'd be quite annoyed by his performance today.
If I was Leicester Tigers, I'd be saying the referee had no bearing on the outcome of the game and we need to look at ourselves.
Well, I mean, he certainly cost Saracens one try. Do you see the Ben Earl push?
Yeah.
There was no way that is... I mean, there's just, no way. You can't, no.
I was 50-50 on that one.
He should go, you threw yourself on the floor... You should be a bit of Nigel Owens about that and say, no, that does not count. He had an obstruction against Martin, which I thought that was ludicrous. And it was so quick. He'd obviously decided from the last line-out he doesn't like what he's seeing. He's told Martin not to do it. He goes up, comes down. But I'm watching it. The ball's coming the other side. So whatever Martin's up obstructing, it doesn't make a material difference. And for Phil Cock and a singer, he's got his knees on the floor. I mean, what more? His knees are on the floor. And he doesn't, and he calls them all. I mean, I don't mind the way Matt Carley referees. It's not the way I like it, but I don't mind it. I understand what he's doing. But you can't be the details guy if you're going to miss out your details.
Okay. That's cool.
Good. Anything else?
I didn't actually mind Carley's performance.
It wasn't the best of the... he's a very good ref normally.
Did you have money on Tigers, JB?
I did not put any money on after last week. I'll never do it ever again.
What about a positive story? Before we get onto that.
Bath.
Bath. Connor Quinlan has emailed us, contactedchasers@gmail.com. And he marked this email as important. First, all caps. Important, capital letters. And he said, I've marked this as important due to the hilarity of the situation. Gents, Bath currently sit bottom of the league, technically below the currently suspended Worcester.
It's not good, is it?
Taunting my Bath supporting mates, I realise that this is likely to continue until the end of October when Bath play Worcester. This brought about the following hypothetical, which I propose for your discussion. Assuming Worcester could be resurrected for a single day in its current guise, this is worth getting a crowdfunder for, in its current guise on October the 29th, i.e. with no prior games, no prior training, not fielding a full 23 and continuing to field 40-year-olds as subs, no Wi-Fi, how many points would they still beat Bath by? Yours sincerely, Connor, Saracens fan. So, yeah, technically, because Bath's points difference is poorer than Worcester's, Bath are technically bottom below Worcester.
Amazing.
Well, they're on less points as well because Worcester actually won a game. Remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course they're on less points because fewer points because Worcester won a game.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
of course.
Poor old Bath. Right, Bath. What were you going to say about Bath?
I was listening to, because I had some bits and bobs to do, I listened to BBC Radio Devon while I was at the house.
How did you access BBC Radio Devon?
I thought I'd record the Saracens Leicester game and I would listen while I was doing the jobs I had to do, listen to the Exeter Sale game, Sale Exeter game. And so I listened to that and the commentators there, and I called it a trope and it's a trope that we need to stop. They were going, you look at Bath's squad and you wonder, how can they not be much better than they are? Their squad's not great. Yeah. Their squad is not great.
It's declined, hasn't it?
It has categorically declined. And the point I made the other week, it's not the squad that they need when they are going to be trying to grind out
results.
It's
not your granddad's Bath squad, is it?
No.
So one of the most concerning things that I saw when I looked at this is the back row. So they've gone from this almighty back row, which was, you know, Lowe, Faletau, Underhill, Mercer.
Yeah.
Just straight up murderers.
Yeah.
And I like Bayliss. And I like...
Bayliss is a good player.
Bailey. And then...
Like Miles Reed.
Sorry, Bailey, what did I say?
So you like Bayliss and Reed.
Bayliss, Reed. And then Van Velser is in. Starting six now. I mean...
No, they've got a load of injuries.
Don't they always, though?
I mean, Van Velser, Reed, Bayliss is not a scary back row.
No.
I mean, I'd take Beardmore, Cocker, Logan over that.
I fancy myself as doing a job at Openside.
Yeah, I'd say so. It's just not scary back row. I mean, they work hard. There's a lot of endeavour there. There's some speed. There's not much carrying. There's not much hard hitting. There's not much collision winning. And that's a problem. I think you can have one of them, but you can't have all three of them. And you probably can't have Van Velser in almost any circumstance other than at absolute catastrophic.
Johan Van Gran has said, very honestly, it's not good enough. And also, they are sniffing around Worcester, as we suspect. I mean, you and I talked about Ted Hill and Ajoma and Lawrence.
Allegedly, they want three of their players.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even seem like the three that they need. So it's like Lucid, Sutherland, Lawrence... Why do you need Lawrence?
They don't need Lawrence. Lawrence is super talented, though, so anyone would take...
What, put him at six?
If you can afford Lawrence, get Lawrence. They could do with Ted Hill.
Ted Hill was the other one.
We talked about that in the midweek pod, that's a great fit. But if you could, and I feel bad about this because he's a very, very good player, but if you could right now just go, you can take Ollie Lawrence and give up Cam Redpath. Bath would do that just because of his fitness, his unavailability.
Perhaps.
They'd do that straight away.
Perhaps. So here's an interesting one for you. Have you heard that...
I reckon they're swapping for JJ as well.
Ooh, maybe not yet, but maybe.
Yeah, probably.
Well, here's an interesting one
for you.
They
get the cheaper WJ.
Yeah, because it was JJ v JJ at the weekend, wasn't it?
And he looked good as well. Yeah. So did Loader. So did Hassel Collins. Anyway, so here's an interesting thing for you. The company that's gone into administration for Worcester is not the company that holds the players' contracts.
Yeah. So I read this in The Guardian. I read it quite quickly and got a little bit confused. But because there was talk of one going into liquidation and one going into one of many going into administration.
Right. So here's what it sounds like. And I need clarification. I've not really looked into it. It sounds like the Worcester owners are trying to loan out their squad. Yeah. A bit of cash, which is a little devious, you might say. But presumably Worcester still have a salary cap, right?
Well, that's an interesting question.
You can't loan players and not have it as part of the salary cap.
But if they're not playing in the league, the salary cap's irrelevant.
No, but I mean, if another player paid to loan them, because all I need to do is pay you, right?
So if I pay your owner 20 grand a year to have you, and he picks up the rest of the bill, where does that number go?
Yeah, there's something.
I think there was, because in the Dyson report and all that, they stopped any way of circumventing whatever you get paid to play rugby not landing on your salary cap.
Yeah, but do you know what they did? I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying this. They did it because they were doing it the other way around, weren't they? So Mike Williams was mysteriously showing up on the bench for Leeds Carnegie, and his teammates would say, hey, you coming on? Say, no, mate, absolutely not. So then that salary from Bath would go on to Leeds.
And
this is the other way around.
And Manu Tuilagi, I'm not saying this happened, I'm just using a hypothetical example, but Manu Tuilagi was being paid X amount at Leicester, but then would have 3 days consulting at JCB.
Yes, something like that.
A very, very significant amount of cash.
But like, that is definitely... That, even before the updated or amended rules, because one of the things that Marrow got done in the Saracens one was appearances for, it was Lucy Ray's,
that's right.
A company that she was operating with, and there was zero record of him ever. He got paid, like, I think, over 100k for three appearances. Details not precise, but they didn't even bother to falsify the record that he ever attended anything.
It's so easy when you just get a selfie with Mario.
Yeah, you've got him there all the time.
Yeah,
just get him with a banner saying
16th of December.
Yeah, today's newspaper. Yeah.
Like a hostage. So anyway, that happened.
But it is an interesting one, that, because if Worcester are kicked out of the league, then they no longer have to follow the salary cap. So I'm not saying they're going to start signing players, because there's no point, but the rules wouldn't necessarily apply to them the same, and they could, in theory, loan players out if that trading organisation stays the same.
They'd have to be paying the players.
So this is where it all falls apart.
Well, hang on, imagine this, right? Imagine that I hoover up, say, 20 of the best non-contracted players, and I agree to pay them a retainer of 15k for the year. They'll have to go out and, you know, play rugby with somebody else or whatnot.
They've got to train in your CrossFit box.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm paying them a retainer.
So you're like, is it Foxcatcher?
Yes, very much like Foxcatcher. Is it Fox Hunter or
Fox Hunter?
Yes.
The guy who has the wrestling gym.
In my mind, I had them dispersed around the country, but I pay them a retainer. But in your mind, and I like this more, we have like a little camp, and we all wrestle together.
Exactly.
Yeah, fine. Yes.
Wrestle together, shower together.
You're making sure they're each other up before you wrestle together.
Isn't there a weird thing in that where they dye each other's hair and stuff?
You're making sure they're in peak physical condition.
That's not the
JB.
Point. That's not the point.
You've got this stable of rugby players in peak physical condition.
Yeah. Yes. And then as Bath need extra players, I lend them out to Bath.
Yeah.
For a tiny little sum, like a central reserve of players, which I am paying.
I like it. Well, I think that's almost what they're trying to do. Now, you're right, Tim. The first and most pressing problem is they've got to pay those players. They haven't paid them for September. Those players, as I understand it, anyone who's not been paid has put in their 14-day notice, which is termination of contract at the end of the 14 days if the payment issue is not rectified. So come whenever it is, probably about 10 days from where we are now, there will be a lot of available players.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if these guys lend out, say, Sutherland? Say Sutherland goes on loan next week.
Sutherland gets paid. He's got to get paid in the next 10 days.
Yeah, yeah.
But he goes on loan.
But he plays in the next 7 days, right? Yeah. So they put him on loan right now before he's... So then he goes to Bath, for instance, and then Sutherland finds out that Bath have got to pay the Worcester guys for his services whilst he's not being paid. He's got 3 days to run before his termination of service.
Yes.
No, thank you.
Yeah. You just say, I'm not doing it. Yeah. I'm not doing it.
Oh, looks like you're in breach of contract, Mr. Sutherland.
So, obviously, we have nothing but sympathy for the people directly affected and worried
about
their mortgage being paid, all that sort of stuff. And I can totally understand why people were frustrated at the statement that was put out by the Worcester owners. And two things can be true at once. You can be massively sympathetic and be frustrated at the Worcester owners. And am I alone in also looking at this situation in a kind of a cold, as we talked about before, JB, on that little podcast we did, being Vulcan about it and going, they just need to be allowed to fail.
Yeah, they need to be allowed to
just
fail.
Needs to be, just, they just need to go and liquidate and be allowed to fail.
Yeah. Yeah, we spoke about the lessons to be learned, and I was thinking about this today. How do we stop this in the future? And it'd be something very unpalatable to club owners, but make the Premiership maybe franchise-based. To have the franchise of a Premiership rugby club, you've got to do X, Y, Z. No difference to if you want to own a McDonald's. Like, you can't sell, hot dogs in McDonald's. You just can't. It is part of the franchise agreement. There are rules that you need to follow. There are no rules in the Premiership. They're just a collection of clubs that happen to own shares in PRL, which is an entity to distribute central revenue. And that is it.
I think two leagues of eight or two leagues of ten. And that's how I would do it.
One league of ten.
Geographically, you do ten, you will have the set. It will be a Premiership will be South West, South East, and a bit of the Midlands, and that's it.
Works for rugby league.
Because
mate.
If you cut down to ten, Sale have got to go.
Sale will not go.
Well, no, exactly.
Why would Sale go?
Because they've got no crowd. If you were picking cold, if you were just given numbers on a spreadsheet, Phil built a spreadsheet to try and justify why which ten clubs you keep. Irish might go, but Sale will go as well. Newcastle go.
Newcastle probably deserves to go. Is it would be the answer?
But then, sales attendance is not great.
But then what you have? Very different. So Worcester, Sale, Newcastle, London Irish gone.
Maybe that's what it takes. So,
and then you've got Southwest, London, and a bit of the Midlands.
Well, like I say, it works perfectly in the Northwest for rugby league. I don't know why it wouldn't work for. Don't know why it wouldn't work for rugby union.
But like, there's about 80,000 people in the whole country who care about rugby league.
Yeah, that was a joke. It does not work for rugby league.
So two leagues of eight allows you to strategically grow the game in certain areas. It's happened in France.
Are you not a little bit bored of the growing the game thing?
Yeah, and the two leagues of eight, I can have...
Or ten.
I could have a bit like you've had in the Pro 14 Rainbow Cup, where you have one overall league structure, but two conferences within it, and you play... You play some teams twice and some teams once.
Just
because I think that's not an ideal solution. But one thing that I do think has to happen, but no one's going to want to do it, is there's got to be fewer games overall.
100%.
There's just got to be fewer games, and it's no one's going to be willing to give up their slice of the pie. But in doing so, I'm certain you'd make the pie bigger if you made the fewer games, which means the quality of the games that there is increased.
Yeah, I agree with you, Phil. It's got to be less games. It's just got to be less games. Fewer. Thank you. And I think, actually, look at the problems the Welsh are having. They're sustaining four teams when we know they can't. They should have been at two teams immediately. England should... I mean, the Premiership is very good as it is. Fewer teams would mean more internationals and more talent in those squads. It'd be a phenomenal... competition. Then.
And you have more internationals in your games. You're not missing them for half the season.
Yeah.
You're missing them for a few games.
I totally agree. I think we're all
on the same page.
I just disagree.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Be that you can go down to 10 and then just pull up the ladder.
That's what I'd do.
To the others.
I mean, yeah, so, I guess it works geographically for Australia and New Zealand, doesn't it? Because they kind of have strategically placed things
there's all also,
around.
There's also 30 million people in Australia, 4 million people in New Zealand.
Yeah, but I'm saying, to your point about the geographic locations, you're saying that Sale and Newcastle would have to go. Obviously, I'd have a few things to say.
They're strategically massively important to have Newcastle and to have Sale, but they do not justify their spot in the league if you were going to cut it to 10.
From a fan base perspective, they don't. Money.
What would be your criteria? Obviously, it'd be. What would it be?
Fan base?
It would be fan base would be a massive part of it.
Ex-winners? Ex-winners would work.
Newcastle, Sale?
Yeah. Stadium size?
Yes.
Well, I don't care because you can have a massive stadium and have 4,000 people rattling around in it.
Yeah, physicality of pack, that'd be one. Physicality of fly half.
I want to have a Premiership team on my doorstep. I'm just saying when you start going, cut it to 10. It's like, okay, who are you cutting?
You do want it on your doorstep, but not too close to your doorstep, as I found out.
Yeah,
quite right. Phil vetoed the Racing type stadium that could have been in Manchester.
Thanks
Cheers,
for nothing, Phil.
But also, if it were, let's say, two leagues of eight, and you could have a meaningful amount of money so that you, if you get relegated, you don't go into oblivion. This is what it's like in France. You can also then go, we need a team on the South Coast.
We need a team in
Southampton or Bournemouth or Brighton. We need a team in
Cornwall,
potentially.
Is there enough talent for that, do you think?
We need a team in Yorkshire.
So I just don't see there's been enough talent.
Leagues of eight, I think there would be.
Well, two leagues of eight, okay. But they have to be equivalent leagues. I have no interest in seeing second tier professional rugby.
You're just diluting.
I think it's tiers. I think it's two tiers. Because like the top 14 and the... Well, maybe it's well, two,
would you
the
watch
top, two
top 14 works... Sorry, the Pro Day Dirt works because they've got good fan bases. I haven't always
in all those teams. What I'm saying is you start a team in Kent or in Brighton or something. It's the same as what's happened in the areas of France like... Normandy, where there's rugby's not been a thing, and they're Ruin, and I can't remember the other one.
Yeah,
I remember looking a few years. This is pre-COVID at English Championship versus Pro Day Deux, and the average attendance for games, and it's like three times greater in Pro Day Deux.
Yeah, but you are right, of course, but it's a chicken and egg because when you pull the funding and don't have any televised games and don't appear to give a damn about the second tier, then you can't complain when people don't turn up.
That was looking backwards. That's not in the position that we're in now. That's looking back when it was better funded.
Okay.
There were televised games.
One thing I would love to do in rugby, more than anything else, is scrap the term growing the game. I want it gone. In fact, I don't think it should even be an objective. It should be a healthy side effect. Because the things that people justify to grow the game are nuts. Now, it depends how you look at growing the game. But you hear, like, we need to make head injuries front and centre of the game to grow it. Like, what? We need to make health and safety front and centre of the game. Why? To grow it. We need to make touch front and centre of the game. Why? To grow it. Like, everyone that says they want to grow the game comes out with the most preposterous ideas not to grow the game. It's incredible.
The head injury one is a very tough one because it's the more you promote it, the worse effect it has for the game. But you've got to be doing the right thing, like for the players,
but it's not heading promotion, is it?
Yeah, it's not promotion. But no, but as in, like, you've got to make people aware of it. Yeah. But the more you make people aware of it, the worse it is. And no one with, say,
football in England, no one has engineered the situation where there is a team in the northeast, a couple of teams in the second biggest city, Manchester, a team in Birmingham, a team in Leeds, a few teams in the Midlands. No one has engineered that. It's just... So organically, one on the South Coast. It's just organically happened.
So some other things about things we could do in like perception of the game, so on and so forth. I heard a really interesting conversation the other day from two people I cannot name, and two things that they said were a certain broadcasters.
You can't name them because you don't know who they are, or you overheard this conversation.
I heard the conversation. I can't tell you who it is.
Oh, okay, cool.
Because it's just not fair.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It wasn't for public consumption. But one was. Premiership rugby will not give the heart rates of the players during the game. Do you know why? GDPR. GDPR.
I know that was one of the ideas that we've had little brainstorms between some of the guys at BT Sport. That's one of the things
idea.
That we've said would be there.
GDPR, okay, fine. And the other one was they're not allowed to promote or they try not to promote the physicality of rugby, which I think is nuts because that's actually what we want to see. So, you know, grow the game because it's a good game and this is what people want.
Well, let's talk about what people do want, and it's OHC and Ben Loder flying down the wings and dotting down.
Certain people who have the pair of them in their fantasy rugby draft team.
Hang on.
Definitely on that.
Who was the first one?
OHC.
OHC. Right, sorry. Yes, agreed. That guy is having some season, is he not?
Hassel Collins.
Yeah.
Henry Arundel, when he plays 80 minutes, is rubbish.
Yeah, it's not for him. Should be Tom Parsons starting. Henry Arundel off the bench. Have you seen the clip of Harry Arundel in England training? And his feet, it's ridiculous.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. And then they go, well done. Well done, Henry. Well done, Henry. And he just skins these two bags. Incredible. Loder, first time that we've seen him this season. Did he get a hat-trick or did he just get two?
Both of them got a hat-trick. Those two both got a hat-trick. Loder played on Tuesday night as well in the Prem Cup.
Sale was so close to signing Loder.
Really?
Yeah, about 3-4 years ago.
He's a good player.
Well, isn't he? I can't remember.
He had a couple of bad injuries, but he's a hell of a player.
I think it was when they lost Mike Haley or someone like that. But yeah, they looked at getting
Loder. They lost Haley and Addison at the same time, didn't they?
Yeah.
They both went.
So he was next cab off the rank. How I wish he came to Sale. He's brilliant. All of a sudden, London Irish. I mean, we said, didn't we, Curtis Rona is the guy that they can't drop. Seems to be that they can.
Well, no, more than that. Curtis Rona has not, apparently, reportedly, rumoured, Curtis Rona has not turned up at London Irish this week.
No.
And has apparently not been returning phone calls to his teammates.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Is he out with Tiny Temper? Well, wow. That is... I did not know that, Tim.
There is a story unfolding there.
He texts me back.
So Curtis Rona is apparently...
Wow.
AWOL.
Well, isn't it just amazing?
Trying to engineer a move to the top 14, perhaps? I don't know.
He might be wanting to...
Western Force?
Well, it might be wanting to play for Australia.
Yeah.
In the World Cup next year. And they've only got... The rules are slightly different. It's not Gitto's law now, is it? They can only have three non-Australia-based players in any squad. So, like,
Arnold would be one.
Arnold, right? There's gonna be a second row in there.
Yeah.
Karevi probably will be in there if he's fit.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Bernard Foley,
Or Quade Cooper.
Yeah. Be in there. Like,
he's good enough. If he was English, he'd be in the England squad, no question.
He's a very good player.
He's a very, very good player. So, but there's something going on there, and also it means potentially. London Irish could be one of the teams who suddenly have a bit of salary cap that they could go
Ollie Lawrence.
Fishing in the Worcester
Pond.
Funny.
If they go for Ollie Lawrence, they're mad. The amount of talent that they produce in the outside backs. I mean, they just moved...
Ben Hart.
No. Joseph.
Will Joseph.
Will Joseph starts the centre and he outplayed Jonathan Joseph. And Jonathan Joseph is one of the best 13s the Premiership has ever seen. So, you know, they're looking okay. And they've got Parton to come back. They're looking fine. I can't...
What London Irish do need is someone to bother defending. Cause,
do they?
Well, it's great you can score 47 points against Bath, but if you concede 38 points against Bath, that is a concern.
They lost the second half, something like 12 points to 31, something.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have given up, though, wouldn't you? If you're against Bath, why would you? You know you can score at will. Why would you go any harder?
Yeah.
Maybe Ollie Lawrence could shore up that defence.
Maybe, but it's just a pointless signing.
It's fun. It must be fun to watch, though.
I can't even think where Ollie Lawrence fits in at the moment.
Most
teams would take him.
No. Where does he fit in? Because you've only got him. He will improve any team. That's undoubted.
Yeah.
But it's about where you put your allocation.
We talked about this. I think Exeter's the perfect fit. Witten coming to an end. Devoto hasn't been seen very much.
Yeah.
He did say that.
Losing big names. I think Exeter's the perfect fit for Ollie Lawrence.
Yeah, he's much bigger than Hendrickson as well.
Yeah. The diminutive Witten and the enormous Hendrickson.
Yes, thank you, Tim. Well, you know, look, if Rona's gone AWOL, that's a lot of money to go missing. Probably London Irish are happy to let him go. Don't call him, boys.
Yeah.
Turn off your phones. Yeah. 14 days, he's out of here.
calling his phone like Worcester were calling round to get props from other Premiership clubs.
Oh, that was exactly. It was in the rugby paper today, by the way, the Roan thing.
So right. I was wondering where that came from.
Well, I'm just filling out the it's not just spurious rumour.
I wonder if he was unhappy before that, or if he made it known, because I can't imagine London Irish wanting to keep him if he wanted to go.
I think the Australia thing does check out, actually.
Yeah. So World Cup next year, you'd fancy his chances.
Well, you know,
I'm sure if he said to his coaches, I really want to play for Australia, can I go?
I'm sure they'd let him go.
I'm sure they would,
because they've got the talent and he will be a big paycheck.
Yeah, there's no relegation.
Yeah.
Like you say, paycheck. And you know, I've seen Premiership clubs deal with this before. And if you don't want to be there, they don't want you there.
Well, they had, who's the tight head prop? Kepu.
Yes.
Kopi Kepu, who something similar ish happened early COVID, and he just went. Yeah.
See you later, boys.
Yeah, there's 300 grand off our payroll.
Yeah, they would let him go in a heartbeat, so hope he's okay.
Yes, absolutely. I mentioned the Worcester not calling round for props when they're supposed to play Gloucester late last season. It happened again. Worcester Gloucester game. Cancelled. 250 grand lost to Gloucester.
Gloucester must be sick of Worcester not showing up.
Half a million pound bill that's going to be hitting one or more of those multiple companies that are all in liquidation or administration.
Yeah. Worcester really know how to screw over Gloucester. Fair play. Fair play. So, what does the table say about this?
So, they are... I think the statement right now is the games are postponed. There's been no points allocation.
Postponed? What? Is there a chance that Worcester reform and play all their back games? Back-to-back games?
That's the current position.
Come on.
I know, it's...
Come on.
Absolute clown world.
It's never happening, is it?
No. It's not. No. So, postponed. Brilliant.
Yeah, and we've got the Wasp situation about to come to fruition. I think, is it... they're 14 days or whatever will be up sometime... In the next soon.
Now that's
when the bonds are due and the £2 million HMRC bill is due.
Yeah, and that's a messy thing because there was this. I don't know if we spoke about it, but there was the Wasps are in administration. Oh wait, no, they're not in administration. They've just appointed administrators.
Yeah, but you can only appoint administrators if there's a very, very real chance that the inevitable outcome is you're going to go into administration.
And also, there's one thing I know about administration, or administrators, they're very expensive. Mm. Like this is not an easy option. This is not a cheap option.
They don't do it as a favour, no.
Unlikely. Some of them really, really love their job.
Of course.
Only because they're getting paid enormous buckets of cash.
Yeah.
We will see. I mean, if you were...
Tell you what if you were massive, an administrator, by
if
the
you
way.
Were a massive, if you were a massive rugby fan with endless amounts of cash, then Wasp would be someone you'd go...
Well, worthless cash.
That's a great club. I'll get involved in that. Alternatively, if you were an entrepreneur, I think you would look at that and go, can I have the business... But not the rugby club. Can I have the stadium?
This is my point
and
about
the casino. Yeah. But I don't want that rugby club.
This is exactly my Worcester point. You know, what were they expecting? Mm. So anyway, I tell you who weren't expecting what happened.
Exeter Chiefs.
No, Bristol.
Bristol Bears.
Well, someone else that wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bristol. Is this
tales of the unexpected? Eh.
Is this overconfidence gone mad? Is this just hubris from? Pat Lam
I don't think Bristol. Pat Lam is the kind of guy to suffer from hubristic delusions, do you? That's not the Pat Lam that I know.
It did when the team sheet came out, I was my eyebrow was a little bit raised. Are they underestimating Newcastle? Newcastle haven't played well in the first two games, but Harlequins had a real tough trip. So up there.
A young academy product, Jack Bates, in the centre.
Rich Lane
at fullback.
Now, what was the thing that you texted us, Tim? You texted something about their salary cap. Just repeat that. Like, how much of their salary cap they were missing?
Both of their marquee spots were not involved. And then
Redrada and Pietau,
which is roughly 2 million.
Or Luatua.
Call it 1.5.
Yeah, but then you've got Luatua, Genge, Also unavailable.
Sinclair played.
But those two alone, on reported salaries for those two alone, you're at somewhere around 15 to 20% of the entire salary cap.
That's 20% of the salary cap on those two.
And then when another £400,000 salary cap in Sinclair goes completely missing, now you're really, really going to struggle.
Yeah. And Kingston Park's not an easy place to go and play. Fair play to Newcastle, because I didn't see this coming. I don't think anyone saw it coming.
I thought they'd have a chance. I thought Bristol would still win, but I thought Newcastle would make it interesting.
Yeah.
But the way that they did it as well, because they did some of the tough stuff up front. The Collett try and McGuigan, of course, McGuigan gets over. But Carreras. Oh, my God. And Carreras and Maroney. Maroney's feet at times were wonderful, but the way he hits,
he
put in a few absolutely shuddering hits. The best one was the one on Sheedy, which forced a penalty.
I don't think it was. I think the best one was the one on AJ.
Oh, but
on the line.
So, well, the one on Sheedy on the line. The one on Sheedy on Newcastle's line.
Yeah, the one.
Oh, the try-saving tackle at the very start, you mean Carreras?
Was it Carreras on.
He made
Carreras
that.
On AJ.
That was Carreras on AJ. No, the one which actually made it an 8-point game, which effectively won the game, was kickoff. Maroney makes the first tackle, and then he makes the first tackle. He gets up, goes around the corner, and Sheedy gets a scrappy ball and runs it.
Gets marmalised.
Yes, I do know the one you mean.
Absolutely flattened him, which led to the penalty, which made it an 8-point game, which effectively sealed it.
So, do you think Newcastle, because these boys only showed up like 5 days ago, they flew in from Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg on Monday night. They landed in Monday night after a long flight. They did a very, very light training session on Tuesday. Dave Walder deliberately kept all of the game plan very, very simple to accommodate them. I think had they not been pumped in the way they were by Worcester, they probably wouldn't have played them, but actually thought, well, what have we got to lose? We're going to lose them again in the Autumn Internationals. Let's let the boys play.
Well, not only that, I suspect there's something in playing all three of them together, because language barrier is not such a big thing then, is it? As long as one of them can explain to the other two what on earth is going on. I mean, I don't know, maybe they all speak perfect English, but having three of them is useful. And they all
live together as well, I think.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
It would make sense. I bet they have great barbecues.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Super, yeah. If you get invited to a barbecue in Newcastle, make sure it's that house.
Yeah.
having those three internationals, I do think that Bristol horribly underrated them. Horribly.
Mm. That was my read. It was my read before the game when I saw the team. It's definitely my read after the game. Mm. I mean, Bristol, in terms of the game, there's that 10-minute window where Newcastle were down to 13 men. Bristol scored two tries, and that was it. Besides that, it was just knock on, reset scrum, turnover in the ruck, knock on, missed tackle. There was barely a shot fired.
I have a theory, which I cannot prove or substantiate, like most of my theories, but I wouldn't be surprised if Bristol had the most handling errors of any team ever to play on a 3G pitch in the professional era.
Yes, specifically an Astro or 3G, 4G. Yeah.
It's not wet, is it? It's not muddy.
Yeah. It looks a bit greasy, but yeah, it's not muddy.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Miles Burley's emailed
us. You were there, Tim, weren't you?
Yeah, he's a Newcastle fan. Yeah, it was greasy on top. It was biblical rain earlier in the day, but it was turned out to be a nice evening. And a fantastic finish. Like you say, that try was just epic.
That try was awesome.
Yeah, that try. I mean, we're talking about the three Musketeers there. On the other wing is Radwan.
What? Weren't the three Musketeers French?
Doesn't matter.
Three Amigos.
Three Amigos.
It makes more sense than three Musketeers.
Yeah, but Musketeers are kind of very suave and sword fighty, like swashbuckling. Yeah. I think these guys fit Musketeers better than Amigos.
Okay, fair enough. Miles Burley, contact@toadchasers@gmail.com. Great bod, blah, blah, blah. Just wanted to ramble, really, as a Falcons fan on what we should expect out of the season. We're really realistically underdogs in every game we play going by our budget, as we have the 14th biggest budget in England.
Behind Ealing.
That's true. Aside from our three Argentinian internationals, who could be the catalyst for us this season, our squad is a bunch of academy graduates and championship pickups. Look at the pack on Friday night. And he's listed the pack, and it stacks up with what he just said. He said, Bristol are paying Sinclair £500,000, reportedly, and our tight head was delivering beer for a living while playing for Bladen 5 years ago.
Good lad.
We've lost. He's a big, big unit, Trevor Davison, as well.
He is.
Hey, massive.
Do you want to know who Adam Brocklebank is?
Well, I can tell you who didn't know who Adam Brocklebank is. Carl Sinclair. I don't even know who you are.
What an embarrassment that was.
That is embarrassing.
You can say that if you're Carl Sinclair, if you then go and dominate him in the next scrum.
He was getting smashed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he gets removed and warned by the ref after he's dropped. By the way, do you remember when he went to the Lions and Savvy World got all the credit? Do Savvy World get the blame for this? It's only right that Savvy World, well, pay compensation, I'd guess.
Yeah, give him some cash back.
Yeah,
discount.
Definitely. Discount. Or at least do some free breathing sessions. We've lost four promising academy graduates in the past two seasons, Josh Hogg, Hayden Wood, Will Montgomery and Rob Farrar, because we can't pay them enough to keep them. And I'm sure Radwan will be off at the end of the season.
Who's Farrar? I've never heard of him.
No, I'm not. I'm sure he will be off too when his contract is out to further his England ambitions. Well, I wonder if there might be quite a lot of Newcastle players out of contract.
Yeah, but then it's if the salary cap's still at 5 million and all the clubs are spent up, how many can actually afford them?
Well, yeah, Newcastle aren't even spending up to the cap. No. They're quite open about that. As a supporter, I've come to expect not having too much hope going into a season. We're normally an afterthought to everyone. Mm-hmm. Did you even do a preview, season preview for us?
We'll do one next year.
And I'll be shelling out more on PRT, Premiership Rugby TV passes, than any other club fans, as we normally only get shown two or three times a season max. However, nights like Friday make it so special being a Falcons supporter and giving a big club a bloody nose in our little cold corner of England. Hopefully we can keep starting to build some momentum now, as we've had so many injuries at the start of the season, and give Walder a chance to do something free of the shadow of Dino. Will Welch was big.
Right, just on this. I know this is silly because, you know, I'm a part-time podcaster who deals in rugby. What happened to Dino? When did he go?
End of the season.
Last season.
I had no idea. I literally had no idea.
It was like a kind of mutual thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was kind of time was up. And he was going to stick around as some sort of consultant. They didn't exactly iron out what the roles would be, but I think...
Did it involve money? Because that probably would have been the sticking point.
I think he's now had a clean break, but he was talking about, you know, he'd be open to going to the USA or France.
Yeah,
or,
he kind of hinted that this is not
He's not retiring.
Yeah.
So, weirdly, if Borthwick wasn't in charge of... If they hadn't appointed Borthwick when they did appoint him, I could have seen Leicester Tigers going back for Dino after they
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know exactly what happened.
Fourth.
Yeah, I know. I don't know exactly what happened, but there's clearly some ill feeling, either in one direction or in both directions, between Dean Richards and Leicester Tigers. For one thing, he used to have a bar.
Yeah, mentioned this. That is interesting.
Dino Bar, and that doesn't exist anymore.
No, it does not.
I don't know what happened.
I don't think many players would want to play for Dino, you know. I think having him at DOR is one way of doing it, because he's separated from the players. I don't think he'd do a good job anymore as a head coach. I think he would really, really struggle in somewhere like USA. Really, really struggle.
Where you've got to do both things.
Where you've got to be on the front line coaching lads who probably aren't as good as you're expecting. I just can't see it working well for him at all.
But yeah, well done Newcastle. It was
hell of a win.
It was great. I hope. Well, celebrations, the crowds there start turning up.
I'll say the celebrations certainly made it feel like a big win. It really felt like it meant something.
And to score that try at the last minute. Like,
Christ, let's just talk
just
about
to go
that
for it. They could have just kicked out and gone, let's take the 4 points.
Yeah.
Let's stop Bristol from getting a bonus point. Let's leave it there. No, we're going to go for it.
I actually thought that. I said this on our little WhatsApp group, but I really thought that was Adam Radwan, the way that he accelerated around the outside and did someone on the outside as well. Outside back on the outside.
Rich Lane got kind of turned inside and
you can
out.
See the sevens Mikey. Player in Carreras there, couldn't you?
Oh,
yeah.
The way the stop and starts.
He did it. He almost did it earlier on in the second half as well, down that left wing. And I think he beat one player, but then just there was too much cover at the end there, where it's just he kind of worked his way free and then just had a one-on-one with Rich Lane and just turned him inside out.
I think there is something in Kingston Park being a tough place to go. And also, I think there is something in the mentality, because Bristol just didn't turn up, but they got straight on they got straight on the plane after the game.
But you know why? You know why Bristol lost, yeah?
No, well, I asked Pat Lamb, and his response was, you can summarise it.
It's Premiership, isn't it? He was expecting it. That'll be 700. That'll be 700k, please. Nothing. There's nothing Pat Lam could have done. He was clear in that interview. The reason he lost it is because of the Premiership. And I'm surprised they even showed up. Credit to them. Credit to them.
There's a lot of love there.
What kind of excuse is that for a director of rugby? It's the Premiership. I was expecting it. Why don't you send some better players then?
Well,
would you not want like an answer if that was your £700,000? The
honest answer, would have been our players played like
wasn't the
worst,
players' fault,
the
Tim.
Worst version of themselves.
No, it wasn't the players' fault, mate.
And we have to. If I were Pat Lam, I'd have said, I don't know what. Yeah, if I was being Pat Lam and taking it on my own shoulders, I'd have said the players played terribly. And we need to look at what we did or didn't do in preparation didn't go out on that field.
How about
right.
I'm really, really arrogant and I picked the wrong team and I thought these guys would roll over because they're cowards, but it turns out we're the cowards and I'm really sorry.
And I don't care because I'm getting paid an enormous amount of money and I've got an 8-year contract.
But only six more years to go, boys. Enjoy it.
Hey, they were unbeaten and it was looking up. So we'll see. They've got a big, a very important game.
Exeter,
Ashton Gate. Yeah.
And there's only now two unbeaten teams in the league. Yes.
The other being Sale Sharks.
Yeah, we spoke about Saracens, so shall we talk about the JB's beloved Sale Sharks?
I'll tell you what, I'm very seldom wrong, but I do think that Rob Dupree is a world-class fly half. I mean, the guy has everything needed to orchestrate a game. Seriously, he's been brilliant. And the other guy as well.
So I've only seen the highlights of this, but he had some nice touches.
Yeah, the other guy as well, who I'm delighted for, absolutely delighted for, is Gus Wall. Four games started, four games won. He's getting better every single game, improving every single game. You know, I've always liked Gus Wall more. You know, this sounds awful, but more as a person rather than, you know, the finished product as a Premiership player, which is to be expected when you're so young and learning. But at the end of last season, if you said, look, it's not going to be Rafi, it's not going to be Faf. And it's not going to be AJ. It's going to be Gus Waugh and it's going to be Rob Dupree. I'd be like, oh, this is going to be tricky.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, so and, far,
and that's
so good.
All Sale have got to do is kind of stay within touching distance before Rafi Quirk and George Ford are back in their ranks. And they are good to go.
Well, I mean, the Jets will improve massively, won't they, when when Ford and Quirk are back. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Because I guess the danger was at the start of the season that
they'd lose it before they had the chance to win it.
Yeah, and also, yeah, Quirk's great, but scrum halves do not last 80 minutes very seldomly because they've got so much distance to cover. Who's going to be the guy to come on and, you know, relieve Rafi or vice versa?
Well, the scrum half doesn't really matter. It's actually George Ford. Can you stay within touching distance and then let George Ford run your team?
Yeah.
It's like that's a very good place to be.
Isn't it? Now I'm much more confident about how Gus Waugh plays. I mean, that last try for Porter was it Porter? It's Porter, yeah.
Carpenter.
That's it. Hang on, what was I saying now?
You were going to go on about Gus Waugh again.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. So now I'm more confident with him. Actually, Rafi's skill set would mean he'd be devastating off the bench. Now, I know nobody wants to be the guy coming off the bench, but that's an important role. It's a really important role.
Game changer.
Yeah, well, we see in the Premiership.
System players. What are the other things that they're
finishers.
Called?
Finishers.
Finishers.
Concussion boys. that role would be perfect for England too.
Yeah.
Because everybody needs two scrum halves.
Mm.
Everybody.
You do.
It's just how do you deploy them, and you know what's the best combination?
I'd love two absolute live wires. So like Alex Mitchell starting, and then Rafi Quirk off the bench.
Yes. Exeter did. They sort of the game just got away from them in the final quarter.
Well, Ian Whitten had a bit of a meltdown.
They did rest up some players. They did rest up their squad as well. When you look at their team sheet, you go, okay, yeah, they.
Was there a disallowed try in this? Do I think there's one game? I think it was. I'm sure there's a disallowed try in this that. I've watched so much rugby and highlights that it's all merged into one. I'm sure there's a disallowed try that I thought was harsh for Exeter, but I can't actually remember it right now.
No,
sorry, caught up there, mate.
But I think Exeter at home with their full team out would have won it, and Sale at home with their team out, they won it. It's two good teams that.
Yeah, and it's so Sale will go well just because of that pack.
Yeah,
that pack is pretty gnarly.
Yeah, they're good. I think where, you know, I was talking to a good friend of mine who is connected to Exeter this week, and just breaking down the game before it happened. And I love Exeter as a pack, but I just think that man for man, Sale just manhandle them. Mm. You know, you think about how the Dupreez play and how the Currys play. Well,
there is a context in this game in that Exeter had three players go off in the first half, two of them second row.
Yeah. Well, so, you can't keep up with the physicality. You can't keep up with the physicality. You know? Yeah. Johnny Hill's beating you up. Johnny Hill looks magnificent in the Sale kit.
Did he play?
Yeah, he played.
Did he play? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah, he had loads of them again. Loads of old Exeter or Sale players against each other. Sam Hill, Tom O'Flaherty, Johnny Hill.
The one that was missing was...
Hang on. Who was one?
Former Byron.
Byron.
Of course, yeah.
Friend of the pod, Byron.
Yeah.
Well, he's not a friend of the pod anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Not after Lancashire Cup.
Not after you demolished his front row.
Yeah, he's going to have to find a new front row now. A new backup front row.
What game have we not touched on?
Boys, Tim. Mixed result for your boys.
Oh, how did Newbury get on?
Come on. You beat Swindon College Old Boys, as you well know, 31-19. But unfortunately, Marlowe came and stuck against Aylesbury under 12s.
Oh, Aylesbury. Excellent. Aylesbury. Good lads.
Yes. Yeah.
By the way, Aylesbury played who this weekend?
Reading Abbey? I don't know.
Not quite Reading
Abbey. Reading?
No, go on.
Rams?
No.
Chinner? No.
You're in the right area when you're talking about Reading.
Slough.
Sunningdale.
Bracknell.
Okay. Wild Geese. Right? Would you like to know who the Wild...
I know who what... Wild Geese. No, that's great. That's Greyhounds. It's not London Irish Amateur.
Yeah, would you like to know the coaching setup for the Wild Geese?
Jeb Sinclair.
it's not good old Jeb,
is
no.
Is it...
Scrum coach.
Hold on.
Polani Alika.
Nope.
Scrum coach will be Neil Hatley.
Matt Cornish.
Nice.
Oh. Okay. Skills coach.
Skills coach, Delon Armitage.
Hugh O'Sullivan. Okay, fine. Happens. And attack coach.
Shane Geraghty.
One Mr. P. Jackson.
What?
Really?
Yeah. And they lost by 2 points, unfortunately.
Oh, Aylesbury.
Yeah, shame. Oh, sorry, it's under 15s, 52-12 win away at Marlow. So it's heartbreaking for you, that, Tim.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah. In fact, maybe you should get your under 15s to go down there and play Aylesbury.
Tour
to Aylesbury.
Got a tough game, Liverpool St Helens next week.
Oof, LSH, you never know what you're going to get with LSH, particularly with all the league boys knocking about.
I don't know what it is about this particular age group in this particular year. There's a lot of very good teams about.
Is there?
There's a lot. It's a good
age before they discover girls and drink.
Yeah.
Mm.
Although I had a situation yesterday when...
Girls and drink?
It's the first time I've had it. Well, no, two things actually this week. One, there was a WhatsApp group message that... Kate is on with a load of Connie and her friends. All the mums are on a WhatsApp group together, and they were discussing the fact that at one party the other week, someone brought some vodka.
Uh-oh.
So just to keep an eye out. So we got to that age. And secondly, last night was the first time when I did the thing. I've glimpsed into all of our futures, and I was sat in the car with the pouring rain and a really, really busy Deansgate at 11:15 last night, waiting for Louis and his mate to come out of Albert Hall from a gig.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
Nice. I tell you what, the lure of town at that age.
Oh,
he's
14. So yeah. It was like a festival all day. And he was in Albert Hall watching a band and came out. And I was just...
You grew up in Newbury, didn't you?
Yeah.
So I grew up in North Wales. Nothing going on in North Wales. You were okay because you're on the outskirts of Manchester. You could experience Manchester.
At 16, I would be... Not quite 14, but 16, I'd be...
I can't imagine how exciting and enticing Manchester must be
that's what
a 14-year-old.
So if I could have my way, I don't think I would have moved out of town, but I would have considered potentially moving. But if I could pick where I would want to be a 14, 15, 16-year-old, it would be right where we are.
Exactly right.
lively, dangerous, which is why I'm gonna move, exciting.
Yeah, which is why I'm going to move everyone out to Snowdonia. Mid-Snowdonia.
When the girls hit 14.
Yeah. Right, pack up. We're going.
Alaska.
Is there a Prem game we haven't mentioned?
There is. Today. Is it today?
Oh, yeah. Quinns. Saints.
Now, I watched the first half of this, and do you know what I thought?
Quinns very good.
I thought, this is going to end up 30-something, 20-something. I'm turning off.
This is going to end up 35-29.
Yeah. I'm so bored of tight, high-scoring games.
Not interested. Quinns will score loads, and they'll give up. Northmore makes the game look easy. Marchant's class. One more. Murley scores a try. Yawn. Will Evans can turn over balls for fun. What do you want me to say? What do you want me to say? This is...
Northampton are a bit flaky, but when they want to turn it on, they're awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
Ludlam, Freeman, Furbank.
It's not quite hard enough. Why do they interview Matt Ferguson for BT Sport?
They always interview him. Often when his scrum's going very badly, yeah, they interview him.
It just seems unfair on him. Also, the questions seem a little bit like demeaning because he obviously doesn't know the answer. Like, what do you need to do here, Matt? Well, we need to get on.
There have been
he's always a bit grumpy. I quite like him.
I quite like him because he's a bit dour.
He's dry, yeah.
Yeah, but
I'd be dour if
I can. If I was the same scrum coach.
Jamie, why are my pensions losing so much money? Well...
there's been a few occasions recently. I can understand why some people sort of go, you know, are you really getting much out of those in-game interviews? There's been some recently that have been brilliant. There was one on Friday night, actually, and Nick Mullins had Scott McLeod just as they were about to take a 5-metre line. Yeah. He says, right, what do you do now? What's the call?
I enjoyed that.
And he did one with Pat Lam as well, and Pat Lam was like trying to get off the call because he wanted to go and make some subs.
Yeah, what was the... do you remember the nickname we used to have for Stuart McLeod?
I do.
Let's leave it at that, shall we?
I remembered it when he was on comms.
Times have changed.
They have. Probably inappropriate. So this game, I'd seen all the tries, but I only watched the last 10 minutes or so live.
So let's piece it together. So we've got a 30-minute gap. We don't know what happened. But I know what happened in the first 40.
Yeah.
Tim, do you have any idea of what happened this one?
I was drifting in and out.
Okay, so
last 10 minutes was very exciting though, because in the last couple of minutes, so Northampton got up to nearly 20 phases and had worked, say, 50 metres up the field in the last 2 minutes of the game when Harlequins are 6 points ahead. So
bearing in mind last week,
yeah,
which Quins would have had that Quins in their heads. Oh, here
massively,
we go again.
Yeah.
Well, I watched Northampton today. First off, they just couldn't catch the ball. I mean, that's the thing which really stuck with me. Well, it's not that they couldn't catch the ball. They kept on dropping it, which is a slightly different
They can catch
skill
it, but like three times in a row is your max.
Oh, yeah, and then they'd be through. I mean, there was... When the Quinns are two tries up, I think it's Hutchinson screaming through, 2-on-1. I think they're going to finish this because they're Northampton. And he just pumps the ball, pumps it again, and then gets slapped out of his hand. Dan Bigger drops a ball, just loads of skill errors which you do not associate with Northampton. You know, if they got their act together early doors, you'd be looking at 50-40 rather than, you know, because they were good to go. They were good to go. They were doing everything possible to avoid scrums, which is exactly the right thing to do. And then after they interviewed the coach, Northampton immediately won a scrum penalty. And then they sort of kind of got to parity for a little bit. But you know, it was very much the game that we expected to be.
They're now 1-4. No, 1-3.
Northampton,
lost
1-3. Yeah, but they've also got 2 try bonus points and 2 losing bonus points.
Oh yeah, okay.
So they're mid table. They're in 8th.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's about right.
I mean, I don't really know. They need to win now. That's what I'd say, because these pitches won't hold up forever.
Yeah. This is the time where they should be winning.
Yeah,
3 out of 4, not losing 3 out of 4.
Look, they had a massive, amazing run at the end of last season, didn't they? Like 1-6 in a row. At the
I suspect they will. They will do again. You know?
I think they started quite well last season as well. Mm. It's that winter break.
Yeah. Yep.
One thing to mention, Tim. I've got a bit of a complaint about BT Sport. I don't have many.
Not enough cocker.
Definitely not enough cocker.
Yeah, I agree.
So I've got 2 complaints about BT Sport. My second one is, they've changed, so I almost...
It's not the win predictor. That's not what you're going to
say. Not the win predictor, which has been interesting, certainly last week.
It's just science, Phil.
I generally watch from my laptop, and I've always really liked the enhanced player, as they call it.
Yeah, I like the enhanced player.
They've changed the enhanced player this season, and it's just not as good. It works okay on a phone. It just doesn't really work very well on a computer. And there's two things to it. One, it seems to just reset all the time when I try and go back through the tries. And that's a software issue. But there's also a coding issue, because whoever's coding the games, he's got a little placeholder to click to say, watch the Ben Earl try. And you click it, and it puts you right as he's dotted the ball down for the try. As in, you don't see anything other than the ball being... it's a tenth of a second before the ball is put down. So you see
it's
that.
It's great for a TMO test, yeah. Checking a grounding.
Exactly.
Not so great for a fan watching the rugby.
Exactly. But then the rewind doesn't really work, and you can't click and drag the bottom, so you can't do it.
Would you call it the
feed that back.
Player?
Thank you.
I'll feed that back.
Say again, Jay.
Would you call it the diminished player?
Yeah. It is until they sort it.
It's not
the enhanced player.
It's not the enhanced player.
Yeah, the diminished player.
I'll feed that back. I'll also peel back the curtain a little bit. I have a pair of Red Wing boots.
Of course.
Which I wore for my George McGuigan feature because I knew that there was no chance of a clash. But I have become very aware Lawrence Dallaglio has exactly the same pair of Red Wing boots.
Does he?
And
so I should get Wolverine boots, but please continue.
Or Grenson.
Yeah,
lovely. Or RMs. I think that's Dave Flatman territory, RMs.
Yeah, and any Australian.
I think, but this is it. I think RMs, you could have two people wearing the same pair of RMs. It wouldn't really matter.
Cause that is
true.
They're not a signature boot, are they?
They're not a signature boot, like a Red Wing mock toe. But, so Lawrence Lally has them. So when I saw that I was working with Lawrence on Friday night, I had my Red Wings with me, and at the very last minute, I changed my outfit and went, no, I can't wear them.
No, do you know
and
what
I'm glad
to do?
I didn't, because, I had that same pair on, and you can't clash. And because I just almost thought it's one of those situations where I've got to know my place. And he's won a World Cup, so deference to, to his shoes.
Yeah, but he's nobody in the podcast world. Good luck being the cornerstone of a radio show, lol. your shoes polishable?
Yeah, I treated them with. I put some mink oil on them this weekend.
I was going to say, if they're polishable, the way you get around this is just have your shoes in better condition than his constantly. I mean, you turn it into a real war of attrition. Every week he's got to be on his guard.
I put a bit of mink oil on them, which is darken the leather slightly, which I quite like. It's good.
Nice. Very easy to darken shoes. Very, very. In fact, it's impossible to
lighten them.
Yeah. Very, very difficult.
We let our listeners down last week as well. It's an apology for JB and me. We didn't do our predictions last week.
Didn't we do them on the second podcast?
Oh, did you two?
Yeah,
did you
two we did
thankfully,
them. And
I bailed you out.
So it's an apology for me.
Yeah, basically.
You would have gone for six home wins.
I would have gone for Newcastle, Sale, Saracens, Harlequins,
Captain Hindsight
Irish.
Over here.
And Irish.
So you would have.
I probably would have gone for I might have gone for extra over Sale, you know.
Might you have gone for Bristol?
Yeah, I probably would have gone for Bristol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I went for Bristol.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
I went for Bristol.
Should we write it on that whiteboard that we've got?
any URC stuff? What's going on? Like Ulster? They'd be like Leinster,
awesome.
Didn't they?
Ulster. A friend of mine was over there, actually. Ulster sadly lost to Leinster. That was a game there was a disallowed try in.
Ah, there you go.
So I was getting confused between those two.
So Ulster were robbed, is what you're saying, is the takeaway.
Ulster were robbed. Now, Leinster, they just put they're so physical. They put so much pressure on teams. It's very difficult to play against them. And so Ulster ultimately was squeezed out. Ulster did score a couple of nice tries late on in the second half. But actually, one of the more notable things was that new Leinster kit, which is new. It's lovely.
It is nice.
Really
isn't it?
Nice with a slightly lighter blue. It's a bit like that. There's a Tim, just to your right shoulder, the French kit, but the colours of it. So the mid stripe of that's a mid 2000s Nike French kit. It's like the stripe of that is the main body of it.
Nice.
With just the sleeves in a slightly darker, like navy.
Oh, I like it.
But then it's got the little yellow accents on it.
Yeah, on the shoulders.
The gold accents, and they've got the four stars on as
well.
Yeah,
it is nice.
It's a really, really nice
kit. So, yeah, another big weekend, wasn't it, for the South African team? So I think are unbeaten. I think Bulls won, Lions beat Cardiff, and...
Is it Bulls and Stormers beat Edinburgh?
Now, I wonder if the Celtic teams, in fact, all the teams in the URC are now starting to regret opening the door to South Africans. Because for whatever reason it was, since maybe the great Bulls teams back in the day, South Africa has not really been very happy in Super Rugby. It's not, I don't know why it never worked out for them, but it just didn't
Not worked. Clash of styles, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure, but it's been, other than the Waratahs in whenever it was, 2014, it's just been New Zealand teams.
Yeah, well, the Waratahs have won it. Reds won it. I mean, that might be, Reds, be a decade ago now.
Reds is even older than the Waratahs. Yeah.
And then before that, it was Extreme Brumbies. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, the
last 10 years, it's been almost entirely Crusaders, Canes, Highlanders.
Yeah, I want to say Bulls have won it three times. I wouldn't be surprised if it's back, at least twice. Anyway, doesn't matter.
But that's going back over a decade.
Yeah, that would be before 2012.
Yeah, definitely.
And this is not relevant to what you're talking about anyway.
It kind of is, right?
Oh, go on.
So...
It's been a long time since the South African team.
Yeah, and
relevant.
I remember there was a tweet from Brian Majority, and he was commenting on a South African game. I can't remember, it was Currie Cup, but it had. Do you remember when they had the Marvel superheroes tops on?
Yes.
And Brian Majority said, "I imagine wasting the prime of your life wearing like gimmicky tops in a stadium full of nobodies, something like that."
An empty stadium.
Now contrast that to the scenes of the two South African teams playing in the final of the URC, absolutely packed
full
out.
Full stadium, yeah.
I think the URC might have unleashed the beast for South African domestic rugby because they have spent, 6 months getting their act together. And since then, they've been absolutely flying.
There's certainly more money in it now.
Well, I was going to say, they're not going to be complaining about the money, so...
Yeah.
None of those players are going to complain that they still have jobs.
Yeah, but I just think like it's the rekindling of domestic rugby. We're looking at our attendances thinking, oh Christ, this isn't good.
Well,
and meanwhile in South Africa,
let's see what the attendances are like for
South Africa,
for the South African teams in South Africa against Dragons.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
it. Why didn't you, all you had to say, Phil, on the Leinster kit, I've just had a look at a picture of it, is it's an Adidas kit again.
It is Adidas as
that's
well.
That's it. It's going to be class.
Yeah,
beautiful.
It's a lovely kit.
That is a lovely kit. Should we get on to fixtures for next week?
Let's do it.
What we got?
Let me find them. Ulster host Ospreys. Come on, Ulster. Got to be a big win.
Yes.
And then in the Premiership. So Friday night, Bristol host Exeter. That will be interesting. So Bristol resting a few players.
That's big.
With this game in hand.
That's big.
This game ahead.
So both these teams have now been beaten.
Yeah.
And yeah, it could be... two defeats on the bounce.
For one of them. Or two winless on the bounce for both of them.
Mm. Bristol are going to have Genge, they're going to have Pietau, they're going to have their big guns again.
So
some of the big guns won't have Semi, I don't think, won't have Luatua.
I don't have the attendance figures for this week, or indeed last week, because I can't find them. But I can tell you in week one, Lions versus Bulls got 62,000 people through the door.
Sorry, say again, how many?
62,000.
Oh, Lions Bulls, that is a derby, isn't it?
It's 62,000.
Joe Berg to Pretoria's Liverpool, Manchester.
One bit of news, three players have withdrawn from the England training squad. This is just the England training squad, not the autumn international squad. Jamie George, Guy Porter and Jack Walker. So two hookers have dropped out and one centre. And if that was the case, who would you call up if you're Eddie Jones?
So Jamie George is going to be playing outside centre, or was going to be playing outside centre. Trying to think who's in the squad.
Well, if Singleton's not, I'd look at Singleton again.
Yeah, could have Singleton in there.
Jack Singleton has been called up.
Okay, so not him. Cowan Dickey will be there.
Well, he's already in the squad,
right? Yeah. Who is left?
Tom Dunn, if he's fit. And he's actually been playing well.
Tom
Dunne
has been trying to carry Bath, bless him.
Yeah, he has been carrying.
The guy that he's called up is George McGuigan.
McGuigan, interesting. Mm-hmm. So was Blamire already in the squad?
No.
That is interesting.
He's just playing games with those boys.
I reckon Eddie watched the feature I did with George McGuigan and the hint that he would consider playing for Ireland and get him back in. He hasn't been playing brilliantly.
No, it'd be someone in the RFU. Get him back in now. We can't have him go into Ireland.
Oh, what hat was... you're both American sports fans. What hat was Eddie Jones wearing in Newcastle? It was like a maple leaf.
Yeah, that is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Ah.
He was wearing that last week as well.
Was he?
Ice hockey team.
Yes.
He's also called up Adam Radwan.
Brilliant.
Interesting.
Well,
he probably thought Radwan scored that amazing try at the end.
Yeah. Well, do you reckon that it's kind of like when Newcastle signed Shola Amiobi rather than Jason Newell? Because because the scout got mixed up for Charlton. So
no way.
Yeah, that is apparently Bobby Robson got them mixed up, so ended up with Shola.
There was another one where Graham Souness got stitched up and convinced to buy what he thought he was buying George
Weah's cousin.
Yeah,
he bought him on half time for Southampton.
Yeah, and then brought him off after 7 minutes.
Yeah. Do you reckon that Eddie said, "Get me the hooker from Newcastle," and the scout went there and went, "Is that the hooker from Newcastle? Yeah, get him in."
Well, yeah, Blumier was he came in on the back row, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, and then BT Sports said, "Well, yeah, Eddie does like his flexible,
hybrid players." Hmm?
But I think if you were going to replace Jamie George, then George McGuigan's a perfect replacement because he's that set piece monster, kind of hooker. Anyway, so we got. I'm going to go for Oh, I don't know. Genji's worth about 6-7 points on his own at the minute.
Are you thinking about fantasy rugby here?
No.
Bristol Chiefs. Are you going for?
Let me be very clear on this. Exeter smash them.
I don't think Exeter smash them. I think Exeter win.
Smash them.
Give me Exeter.
Give me 15 points plus Exeter.
Exeter by 4, I'm going
to
say.
Although, to be fair, Pat Lamb already knows the result of this because he knew the result of the Newcastle game.
That's why he's paid so much.
Yeah. It's a prem, isn't it?
On Saturday, we have only two games because Worcester Quins has been officially postponed. We have Bath hosting Gloucester. Gloucester, who've only played two games because they had a bye week and missed.
And another bye week, it sounds like.
Well, this week will be another bye week. Hey. And prediction?
Gloucester.
5 points to Gloucester.
Only 5?
Sorry. 4 points plus a bonus point.
Oh, okay.
The actual
Gloucester score. Gloucester by 15.
Yeah, about that.
I could see Bath winning this one. No, I'm going to say Bath. Gloucester will win it.
Bath aren't going to win this. Gloucester. Then Tigers Sale. This will be it. Tigers need a win.
They do.
Where are they?
They're seventh. Road. So this is Tigers are seventh in the league, mid table, in the mire, and it's at Welford Road.
Well, from what I can tell, Sale aren't obliged to rest anyone other than Tom Curry, and they've got a good replacement for him. So give me Sale.
I did like having Dan Dupree and a brace of Curries.
Yes.
That's a nice back row.
It is, isn't it?
I'm going to go for Leicester. Narrowly.
Give me Leicester as well.
Do you know who was scouting Sale this week in the Leicester crowd?
Sinfield.
With a notepad.
Sinfield?
Jasper Visa.
Oh, yes.
He's obviously Cobus.
Yeah.
I know that because we got a message from someone saying they were at the game. I'm trying to find it. They were at the game and... Oh, BSB. Here we go. Yeah, BSB. Knowing how much you guys appreciate a BSB, this is from Otis on email.
Otis Donnelly.
Yeah. Contact tedchasers@gmail.com, a Sale fan. I thought you'd appreciate me letting you know that me and my son Matthew were fortunate enough yesterday at Sale v Exeter to be sat by a lot of Sale Sharks players from the men's and women's teams and former Sale player Josh Charnley. Matthew loved it, but couldn't stop himself from looking around and asking why the man sat behind us and three seats along was so big and strong. It was none other than Jasper Visa. He is huge. Quadzilla was in the building. He is a big, strong boy. By the way, I just want to say hello to, I think it's Matt Cotton, one of the writers for The Times.
Okay.
Because this isn't meant to be glib or anything. I appreciate that he listens.
Okay.
Clearly listens. And I appreciate that he snuck in the phrase, big, strong boy, into his preview of the weekend.
Can I just say, do you know who else listens?
Who doesn't listen?
But do you know who definitely listens?
Go on.
Come on.
Eddie Jones.
Radio 1.
Oh.
Greg James. Greg James, yes. Greg James.
Yeah.
He mentioned us on his show this week.
Yeah, and someone else that listens as well, I'm just trying to find... Ben Ainslie and wife Georgie Thompson.
Really?
Yeah, true story.
Georgie Thompson, like Sky Sports, old Sky Sports presenter.
I'm not entirely sure if it is, but I just know that's her name. But I know that they listen.
Yeah, she used to be a host on Sky Sports, and then she moved to go to some like big... I think she went to America to get a big gig then. Ben Ainslie, what a man he is as well. He's a proper...
Well,
man's man.
I guess this, you know, of all the rugby podcasts, the ones that would attract a man's man would be this one, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You're not going to be listening to some of the...
And attract a woman who appreciates a man's man.
Correct. Absolutely correct. Could not be more correct.
I was hearing our good friend of the pod, Ollie Poole, regaling anecdotes of Ben Ainslie.
Of course.
And a couple of weeks ago, while we were running around flushing.
Yeah.
I bet Ben Ainslie's the sort of man with good stories.
Stories of the sea.
Ollie Poole's a man with good stories as well.
Although from his sailing last week, you wouldn't have thought so. Stalling the boats. Come on.
Right, have we got any more games to cover, or is that
two more games? We have the Sunday games. Falcons host Saracens.
Good luck,
Saris.
Yeah, it's a good, great win.
They'd need the rest of the Argentina team to win that.
Really would do. And then Wasps host Northampton.
A million points.
Oh.
Wasps.
Oh, right, I'm going to go for Wasps after a bye week on that.
I think Wasps could do it.
Wasps, there's
some, oh yeah,
there's the uncertainty.
Yeah, there is uncertainty. I'll go Saints.
Give me Saints.
Yeah, that's a good point. That.
Yep.
There we go. Right, we're going to do a little Patreon pod.
We're seeing a try,
aren't we? So patreon.com/eggchasers for more content. Otherwise, thank you very much. Hit subscribe. Tell your mates. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.